Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. Today we continue our coverage of the 2016 legislative session as part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project, a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and New Mexico In Depth. We're taking a close look at government accountability, transparency, ethics, and money in politics this session. In her State of the State address Tuesday, Governor Susana Martinez told lawmakers that public safety should be their top concern. But she also mentioned some government reforms she'd like to see, changing the way we fund construction of new roads, bridges, and water systems, fixing the system we use to track money in politics, and stopping the revolving door that has lawmakers leaving the roundhouse one day and returning the next as lobbyists. These ideas aren't new, but they are getting some sudden momentum with the governor's endorsement. Will lawmakers vote to take the money out of politics and politics out of doing the people's business? We'll talk about that today with my guests, Lori Wiaki, who is the executive director of the Native American Voters Alliance. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
And we have in the studio Janice Arnold-Jones, a former Republican representative from Albuquerque. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
On the phone, we have Justin Horwath of the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Good morning, Justin.
Thanks for having me, Gwyneth.
We are talking to Justin on the phone. Are you at the Capitol already this morning, Justin?
Not quite yet, Gwyneth, but I'll be down there soon this morning.
All right. Well, we're going to get an update from him in a minute. Lori, I want to start with you. On Tuesday, Governor Martinez mentioned a list of recent terrible crimes that have shocked the state. And she told lawmakers that public safety was the most important thing that they were going to deal with in this 30-day session. Do you agree that fighting crime is the most important issue that is facing our state right now?
I actually agree that we all want to be safer. We all want secure communities. We want to be healthier. But I think we really need to think about focusing our resources on other sorts of projects that really do combat crime. So it's like, you know, funding the early childhood education, spending more money on drug courts, you know, the mental and behavioral health services. All those sorts of programs, I think, sort of take the back seat. And yet that's really where we can find the most rehabilitation for a lot of folks that are struggling and dealing with crime. You know, let's face it, New Mexico is really struggling with this issue of poverty. And I think that if we don't address those issues, we're really going to continue to sort of have these sort of punitive crime-fighting strategies that really don't address the root of the problem, and they really don't transform our community into these healthy, safer communities that we really want.
I thought it was, she definitely stopped me when she said, call them turnstile thugs, call them, you know, I can't remember what the other word, some other kind of thugs.
Boomerang.
Boomerang thugs, that's what she said. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, on the one hand, these are people who are doing terrible, awful things that we're all horrified by. On the other hand, I think of Stephanie Mays Gibson, the state representative who resigned after her son was found to be involved in an event like this. And every one of these people is somebody's kid. Right. And so I thought, yeah, I was stopped by that rhetoric there. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. Justin, in the Santa Fe, New Mexican story you wrote about her speech, you said that her emphasis on public safety helped set the tone for a battle between Democrats and Republicans through this session and into the November elections. What is the dynamic that you're talking about there with the elections?
Well, Gwyneth, I think that part of the reason that we see this kind of flood of bills that would stiffen sentences is because I think that Republicans want to get Democrats to vote on their crime bills ahead of election season.
Okay, so they vote on them, and then what?
Well, I think that they're expecting that Democrats might vote against some of them because traditionally Democrats are supported by groups such as trial lawyers, and I think that if they can get Democrats on the record voting against some of their bills that would stiffen penalties, we might see some campaign ads to that effect.
So we're already writing templates for campaign television advertisements and mailers, I see.
Yeah, and I think the same thing is true with Democrats with their kind of stress on ethics legislation, too.
Janice, you're a Republican. You live here in Albuquerque. But unlike former District Attorney Susana Martinez, whom you ran against back in 2010 for the Republican nomination for governor, you don't have a law enforcement background. Both you and your husband have worked in the defense industry and nuclear fields. So do you agree with Martinez's focus on public safety?
Well, who can argue that public safety should not be an issue when we have lost police officers? Of course it comes to the fore. The question becomes, is this the best use of our time? There are some bills in the child pornography bill. It's kind of like fixing tampering with evidence. It was an important piece, but should it be the top note of this legislative session? I don't think so.
She's got bipartisan support on that issue, and that's probably going to happen anyway.
Yeah, I think so. And so, you know, will we run through a bunch of law and order types of bills? Yes, some of them are helpful. The corollary for me is, where is it in the budget? I am seeing a lack of police officers. I am seeing DA's offices under so much stress. And as a result, and actually I'm seeing attorneys who aren't working because there are not enough arrests and there's not enough processing. But the other side, and Laura, you make a good point, do we want to have a population that is incarcerated? And I think that's what we come down to, and I would like to think, and that's Mr. Wath over there, I want you to know. Justin, hi. Anyway, but do we want to just focus on incarceration? If you do, then you need to put money into prisons, you need to put it into corrections, and you need to make sure that the process works. I didn't hear anything about that. But understand, I've sat there, and I'm picking nits here because I know how it works.
Well, we have an hour to pick some nits. So. Folks, we want to hear from you today, too. What do you think? Is violent crime the most important issue facing our state right now? If not, what is? And what should your elected officials do about it? So call in now with your questions and comments. We are 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also email us, callinshow@kunm.org. We have someone on the line already this morning, Jan in Mountain Air. Good morning, Jan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm interested in your guests exploring the definition of safety. I know that a lot of people consider safety to be their ability to carry a gun wherever they want to go. For me, to see that proliferation of guns makes me feel much less safe. So I'm curious to have your guests explore the definition of safety.
Jan, thank you so much for that. That's a really good point. Sometimes we forget that there are people who think about that the exact opposite way that we do. Lori, Senate Democratic Leader Michael Sanchez delivered his party's response to Martinez's State of the State address the other day, and he said crime isn't as bad as she says. He said violent crime rates are down slightly statewide, and if you take Albuquerque out of the equation, they're down quite a bit. I think he said 18%. Do you agree that the governor is trying to set up a political battle here, or do you think that the Democrats are just trying to burst what they see as exaggeration?
Well, I think that, again, I really believe that if we want our police departments to be more effective, right, we really do want them to have all the resources that they need, then we need to stop proposing policies that sort of waste valuable time, waste our resources by doing things like criminalizing young people. You know, for us as Native Americans, that's extremely important because you see that our population is actually quite young, you know, in this year of 2015. And it does become an issue for us in terms of, you know, are we being targeted, you know, all these sorts of things. And it does create a level of tension, and it does create a level of fear that I think we really don't need to have. It's not necessary. And so I think that it is important for us to, you're right, exactly explore what is safety. You know, to me, that's things like providing a solid, good, vibrant education, you know, having economic dignity for our communities, making sure that, you know, if we need a small loan of $350, that we're not relegated to the payday lenders, you know, that we can actually walk into a bank or walk into a place where they will give us that sort of small loan and that we're not being, you know, extorted from. So those to me are the factors that sort of equal up to this idea of what is in the best interest of the public and for our safety. So, but I do think that that's a question worth exploring more, because I don't believe that more guns is the solution.
Janice, you served four terms in the State House. Was crime an issue that people talked to you about when you went door to door in your district talking to people?
No. Crime is certainly an issue if somebody, you know, I have the area up by Uptown, and there would be people who broke into cars. We're always, you know, unhappy about that. There were burglaries. They escalate, they de-escalate, they move around the city. So was it the top note? It was not. But also, when I was serving in the legislature, the number of people on the police force, the number of officers, was much greater than it is now. And so as property crime increases, people do talk about it more.
We have a caller right now, Sarah in Albuquerque. Welcome to the show, Sarah. Good morning.
Oh, yes. Yes, I guess. I just wanted to, you know, mention that the crime in Albuquerque, and also that, road rage, and one of the governor's great proposal is the Project Lily. I've been hearing a lot of the public service announcement concerning that, but we need to end aggressive driving, speeding, tailgating, and road rage. And, you know, I think that when we have, public safety, you know, that New Mexico becomes an attractive business for businesses and tourists and good citizens.
Sarah, that's a really good point. And I'm glad she brought up Lily, because that incident in which a young child was shot on the side of the or on the highway while her father was involved in a traffic. He was the shooter was accused of road rage. That really brought that issue home to a lot of people and scared a lot of people. So even if they aren't mentioning it, you know, the breaking into cars and stuff like that, it really brought that to the public consciousness.
Well, I'd like to ask your caller a question back, is what would be the first step, and we lost her, to fix road rage? You know, road rage is really you and me controlling our own behavior. And I would offer that there is nothing in law enforcement that is going to do that for you, except an attitude.
When I moved here from Washington, D.C., where people honk like crazy, and I honked at people when I first moved here, and then they got really mad. And I realized, okay, so now I like pretend to honk. And it makes me feel better that I'm moving my hand toward the horn, but I don't actually do it. Jared is on the line right now, and he wants to talk about property crime. Good morning. Welcome to the show, Jared.
Good morning. I've been in the security industry for over 10 years now. I've worked in cities all throughout the United States, and I've been living in Albuquerque now for over 3 years. And, obviously our city, we average, from the last report that I read, we average somewhere around 18 to 19 break-ins in a day in the metropolitan Albuquerque area. And, vandalism, everything is in the, you know, there's over 60 reports a day on an average basis. And with our low officer, active duty rate, I mean, I believe we're somewhere around 400 officers on active duty in a day, with a metropolitan area of over 500,000 citizens, obviously there's huge lack there for enforcement. And the biggest thing that I see here is there's kind of been a shift in our country to where police officers are getting criminalized. You know, maybe for a majority of them are getting criminalized for the effects of a small few officers who've made some bad mistakes. But overall, I mean, these officers deal with so much on a day-to-day basis. It's just kind of, why would they want to be a police officer in a city where we're persecuting officers and we're charging them with murder in a lot of different cases? So that's one issue that I see that our city's facing. The second thing that I see, and I talk to a lot of law enforcement, and I work in this side of the industry, I see that there's a lot more emphasis in arrest on, you know, drug offenders. And then when you do get these people who commit property crimes and they do some aggravated assaults and things of that nature, a lot of the times there's a revolving door, you know, with these bail bonds and being able to bail out. It just seems like we're trying to arrest as many people as we can, but we're not really focusing on a certain set. And I feel that you know, we're right next to a state, Colorado, for instance, you know, that legalized marijuana. You know, I you know, you could be an opponent for it or opponent against it. That's not our problem. But I don't feel that we should be filling up our prisons with people who have, you know, some drug addictions. These people need help. They need, you know, they need addiction help. They shouldn't be thrown into the system and burdening the system and filling up our corrections. I mean, we have correction officers I talk to who are on mandatory overtime every week.
And that, Jared, thank you for that point, because corrections is a really big part of our budget. It's not something we talk about necessarily, but when you look at those numbers on a piece of paper, you're like, wow.
Right. But did you see any proposed significant increases in corrections? And that was my problem, is that there were some small increases. But if our focus is to go after the crimes that were laid out in the governor's address, then there has to be a bigger increase, or there has to be another way.
So we have talked a little bit about guns. We've talked about police officers. We've talked now, thanks to Jared, a little bit about pot. Let's move on to something slightly less exciting. One of the things that I was really interested to hear the governor mention was secret pork. That's my favorite. That's my favorite way to talk about capital outlay, because people fall asleep when you say capital outlay. But when you say secret pork, they want to hear about it. We are going to take a quick break. And when we return, we will talk about this money that is supposed to be spent on bridges and roads and dams and things like that, but ends up becoming sausage patties and hot dogs and bacon strips and things like that. We will be back in just 1 minute.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from UNM Continuing Education, where certificate programs and classes in business and technology build new skills and new careers. For a winter catalog, visit ce.unm.edu.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and I'm in the studio with Lori Wiocki of the Native American Voters Alliance and former State Representative Janice Arnold-Jones. On the phone, we've got Justin Horwath from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Justin, are you still with us?
I am, Gwyneth.
Justin, as a reporter, one of the hard things about writing about capital outlay is that the documents detailing which projects get how much money are actually kept secret, which I didn't really realize until I started writing about this. Were you surprised to hear Governor Martinez call for those allocations to be made public? I ask because you recently wrote about how Martinez demanded to know who blew the whistle on her holiday party, saying, "It's a public record, give it to me." But your story showed that she hasn't been quite as forthcoming with her own public records.
Well, yeah, I think that the first thing is that I think for all politicians on kind of both sides of the aisle, transparency is often kind of just this buzzword that they like to apply to maybe their party. And so, you know, this isn't totally true with Governor Martinez, but she has a lot of her, the ethics legislation that she's favored has kind of asked for transparency in the legislature itself.
And the legislative branch, not her branch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the same is true. I mean, we see Democrats now, they're kind of introducing some bills that are calling for more transparency, for instance, in the governor's contingency fund that had had financed that holiday party.
You know, this brings up one of the interesting things about watching our state politics. People think, oh, it's all Democrats and Republicans. Not so much. You know, it's urban versus rural. It's incumbents versus challengers. It is, you know, the leadership versus the new people. And a lot of it is the executive versus the legislative branch. You know, remember, Richardson and our legislature didn't get along so well a lot of the time. And they were in the same party. Listeners, again, we are talking about something that Governor Martinez mentioned that I thought was juicy in her speech on Tuesday, political pork. Under the current system, New Mexico lawmakers and the governor divide up millions of dollars intended for building infrastructure like university buildings right here at UNM, and then they use it kind of any way they want. Martina says she wants to reform that system, and we want to know if you do too. So call us now. That's 277-5866 here in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or toll free 877-899-5866. Janice, I see you waving over here.
Oh, well, I'm saying I have a rant, I'm sorry, because to say that capital outlay has always been secret is absolutely not true. And I, you know, I am a Republican, so if you think I always agreed with Speaker Lujan, that is not true also. However, he did something that I thought was quite remarkable. The Tax and Revenue Committee had a subcommittee called Capital Outlay, and we would sit for hours and listen to bills. We never took a vote, but people were told if it was illegal, you needed to go someplace else. And at that time, not every year, but 2005, 6, and 7, all of the introductions were actually on the website. Now, once all, you know, and in order to figure out what you've got, you know, you don't know exactly how much money there is. So it behooved every legislator to submit all the requests that was in the hopper, because you could only pick from those requests to put into the final bill. But I assure you that every legislator, and only the legislator, chose those projects. Why they are being held secret at this point in the day of transparency, I am absolutely baffled. Absolutely, we have gone backwards instead of forwards. This should not be a secret, but let me just reiterate, the decision of capital outlay is absolutely the legislator's prerogative at this moment. And it really didn't matter whether it was Republican or Democrat. I can remember the most powerful railing at having to come to the capital outlay subcommittee. Railing. Hated it. And it took a lot of time. I, as a legislator, learned more about this state than in any other committee sitting on that committee.
You know, our partner New Mexico In Depth has been writing a lot about the capital outlay project, and our partner Sandra Fish, they've been asking lawmakers to voluntarily release these lists of allocations, and they've got a dozen or so, but that's not very many. Justin, are you talking to lawmakers about where they're spending this money?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of lawmakers are just going to, I mean, you said the term pork. I mean, it's something that a legislator is going to request a project that's specifically in their district, and maybe something that constituents have urged them to build some, for instance, if it's water infrastructure or roads or whatever. And I think, again, this is another instance where maybe that everybody likes to talk about transparency, but when it comes to transparency and how they're spending money, they don't like to talk about it as much.
Well, I would say, but there is a convenient system that has happened the way that this has been done. And I'm lucky in Albuquerque, the Journal never asked me when I got back, what'd you bring me? But the media in the smaller towns actually asked, what'd you bring me? And they could cover by saying, well, you know, the legislature, those mean guys, wouldn't let us fund all of these favorite projects. We only got this, a very convenient excuse.
Yeah, Lori.
So I would like to interject that, you know, right now there's the Tribal Infrastructure Fund, which gets its money from the severance tax bonds. It actually could be looked at as a model, because one of the things that it does is it actually vets different capital outlay projects from Indian communities throughout the state of New Mexico. There's a board there. They really have to sit and listen and prioritize. They do ask questions. Are things in the planning phase or the design, or, you know, are we actually shovel ready at this point? And it really has allowed the tribes to then begin to count on a source of revenue. Also, it really sort of challenges this sort of nickel and diming, right? It's like you have a $2.2 million project, but you're only going to get, you know, $100,000 to sort of put to that. And then, you know, the tribes get, you know, in trouble. You're not spending your money. You have all this money just kind of waiting around. And, you know, and we have heard it from legislators sort of getting after folks saying, you know, we gave you some money last year and it's still sitting there. So, you know, you guys obviously, you know, they try to place this level of incompetence or something on these projects. But the truth is we need to have a stronger sense of the reality of the costs that are needed, the phases that these projects need to go through. And so I actually believe that there does need to be some level of reform. And I'm actually glad to hear Ms. Arnold talk about that, because I was involved in a lot more capital outlay stuff back in the early 2000s, and I remember people being a lot more open about that, and I'm like, what happened? Yeah, so I guess I can say I haven't paid that close of attention. But, you know, the TIF has actually helped to complete like over 188 projects. You know, it's done like $83 million worth of projects over probably a 10-year time frame. And, you know, last year the legislature has tried to cut the TIF. And just one last thing I want to say about that is that, you know, with the TIF, it really was intended for all these critically needed projects. And I think they've identified like $2 billion dollars worth of projects that are still needed. That's not including the wastewater, all that sort of stuff. That's like at an $89 billion price tag.
There are a couple models in the state of ways that projects are kind of working, and the public school capital outlay system is one of the models that folks say is working right now, and we will be talking more about that on New Mexico PBS Friday night at 7, so tune in over there. Justin Horwath, we know that you have to get to a committee this morning. What are some of the topics that you are really watching this week in Santa Fe?
Well, this week I'm going to be, and throughout the session, I'm going to keep a close eye on one of the biggest parts of the state budget, and that's Medicaid, the health insurance program for low-income Americans. In 2013, Governor Martinez accepted the Medicaid expansion, but now we're seeing lawmakers are having to deal with the fact that the federal government is going to be contributing less to this $5 million program that covers health care for more than 40% of New Mexicans.
Well, that's a good topic.
Yeah.
And you were
one thing I'm going to keep an eye on, and then also a lot of this epic stuff we've been talking about on the line here. I think that it'll be really interesting to see what does come out of the session if both parties can get together and hammer out some compromises on topics.
Justin, thank you for talking to us this morning. You all can read his stories in the Santa Fe New Mexican. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Glenn.
Joining us now is Bruce Perlman, who is a professor of public administration here at UNM. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Hi, Gwyneth. How are you? Good morning.
I'm great. We're glad you're here. You have gone back and forth from academia to actually doing what you teach a few times. You worked in the Richardson administration. Am I right?
Yes, I did. I was deputy chief of staff for Governor Richardson, and also I worked in the city of Albuquerque as chief administrative officer for Martin Chavez.
So you can see many sides of these issues. I wanted to ask you, you know, we all say transparency is great, especially when you want to know what your public officials are up to, but it turns into invasive muckraking or digging for political ammunition when you've been elected. Am I right?
Of course, it's difficult to say anything critical of transparency or open government, and clearly open government is what we want to maintain. But reforms in general tend to create other problems when they solve problems. So you've been talking about capital outlay, for example. One of the things that has been pointed out about the national legislature is that party discipline and polarization in the national legislature may be a result of the death of earmarking, which takes away from leadership the ability to reward people. And in some respects, transparency can have the same sort of effects when the negotiations and discussions of average people who are employed as workers in government become the subject of public discussion at every turn. You know, it can create a climate of if not fear, at least sometimes paralyzing inaction. So there's always a downside to everything you do, and I think that's probably the downside.
You know, I was talking to Senator Cisco McSorley yesterday, and he was saying he spends a lot of his capital outlay money giving books and computers and fiber optic lines to schools, public schools in his district, and that these are things that they really need. I think there are a lot of projects that get funded through capital outlay that everyone would say are really important things, that they do benefit New Mexico, that these are valuable artistic and cultural and educational things. I think the argument that reformers are making and Governor Martinez is alluding to is that this is money that we say we're supposed to spend on bigger building projects, like new classroom buildings here at UNM or the Paseo interchange at I-25, which we are all delighted to drive over now, even those of us who didn't necessarily think it was a good idea before. And so, you know, it's which pot of money this stuff comes out of. We have Aaron on the phone now in Albuquerque. Welcome to the show, Aaron. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how do you want to join our conversation here?
Well, yeah, I was just kind of trying to tie in this argument of this discussion on capital outlay to the discussion that was going on with safety. And I think ultimately the broader discussion of what people actually need and what the money that that comes from everyone's paycheck is actually being spent on. And, like, yes, of course, infrastructure, of course, like, we need money going to the schools. We definitely don't need money going to expanding the prison industrial complex in New Mexico. We do need more public services. I think the biggest threat to New Mexican safety is not violent crime. It's not having food. It's not having healthcare, education. And so to hear the governor say the biggest priority should be public safety, we know that means that she wants to just incarcerate more people and expand this profitable prison industry in New Mexico, which does not improve the safety of our communities. It damages the safety of our communities, and it threatens the families and the most vulnerable communities in New Mexico. And so, I just wanted to talk about how the money should actually be spent versus where it seems like the governor is trying to prioritize money being spent.
Thank you for that, Aaron. Let's clarify, Janice, where the money for capital outlay actually comes from.
Right. So two different pots of money. Capital outlay money is bonded money. And so we literally borrow against it, which is why we have a pretty hard and fast rule that this is for bricks and mortar. The operating budget is a different pot of money. So capital outlay is meant for buildings.
This is my analogy that I came up with the other day. Capital outlay is like if you are a homeowner and you take out a home equity loan because you want to renovate a bathroom and it's going to cost $20,000. You can take out a home equity loan and go spend it on shoes, but that's really not what it's intended for. And why would you take out a $20,000 loan to buy shoes? It's not really the right way to do business. That's the argument.
Right. And I want to give confidence to New Mexicans that in the capital outlay budget, you will find very little operating types of projects, because that's not the purpose of the money. However, I will also tell you that one of the poorest uses of capital outlay money right now is buying computers, because they're 10-year bonds, and most computers, especially in schools, last 3 years. So this is not, you know, and this has shifted over time, but that's not a prudent use. What is a prudent use of capital outlay is the interchange, the water systems. You know, this is a huge state. And when we talk about getting water to small communities, and Lauren, I know all we have to do is talk a little bit about water haulers. That is the condition of our state. And it takes a lot of money to build a water system where even now people are hauling water because of the distance.
So you would not want to take out a home equity loan to buy a new MacBook, because if you just bought it with your credit card, you could pay it off more quickly and not take 20 years to pay this thing off. And that's what we're doing. A lot of the capital outlay projects that get money right now, they get as little as $1,500.
Exactly.
And that's the whole project. That's not all the money.
And some of them, I mean, it'll pull on your heartstrings. Band uniforms, football uniforms. They are consumables. They are things which is allowed under capital outlay. But will they last? You know, the measure should be, will they last for the term of the bonds?
Folks, we are going to take a quick break right now. Susana Martinez used her State of the State speech to call for some government reforms, including transparency and changes to campaign finance. She campaigned heavily on transparency, and she's made some big strides in webcasting, posting information online, asking agencies to voluntarily give out more information. But she has also clammed up when pressed by the media and others. What do you think? Is this call for transparency from her in state lawmakers' information a bold move, or is it political posturing? Call in now with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News and use the hashtag NMGoodGov. We will be right back.
Support comes from the Alliance Française, with small, friendly, conversational French classes forming now. All levels, beginners, French for travelers, and French for children. Details at 872-9288 or afabq.com.
On the next Making Contact, I'm Rose Aguilar with a special roundtable discussion on reproductive health and abortion rights, 43 years after Roe v. Wade.
We are going to work to make sure that the voices of women and families are heard at the legislature this year and not drowned out by these anti-justice individuals who work against us.
Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan, and I'm here with Lori Wiocki of the Native American Voters Alliance, former State Representative Janice Arnold-Jones, and UNM Professor Bruce Perlman. This is the second in a series of shows we're doing this year as part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project, a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and New Mexico In Depth. We are diving deep into issues of good government, transparency, ethics, and money in politics during this legislative session. Lori, I want to go back and just touch on that infrastructure money one more time, because critics say that the system we have now does a great job of funding projects like museums and schools and things like that in the major population centers. But it tends to neglect more rural areas where much more infrastructure is needed. How does the current system work for rural communities and Native communities that you talk to?
Not very well. I mean, I think one of the more outrageous stories that, issues that is currently happening is out in both McKinley County, San Juan County, where a big part of the Navajo Reservation exists. You know, the fact is that there are buses, there's bridges out there that can't carry the full weight of buses. So, you know, the schools are having to respond to this by, you know, taking two small vans out to, you know, cross this bridge to get students back home. Or they're having to drop students off on one side of the bridge and let them run over and hope that parents or, you know, different community members, chapter houses or whatever, can pick those kids up and actually take them to their houses. You know, this is some pretty basic stuff, and these bridges are, like, extremely old. And, you know, again, the idea that we could only get $100,000 to start thinking about fixing a bridge is really ridiculous in a lot of ways. And that's one of the main points what we really we were really in disagreement with, the idea that we needed to cut the Tribal Infrastructure Fund. That was one of the funds that was working. It was really starting to prioritize these projects. And, you know, we're getting cut on that. And that's a really terrible thing for the state of New Mexico to do.
I want to mention that, you know, critics say that the capital outlay system doesn't work well, in part because it gives the same amount of money to every lawmaker in the House and the same larger amount to everyone in the Senate, when clearly there are some greater needs like these bridges. The folks at Think New Mexico, and we talked yesterday, I talked yesterday with Jason Harper, a representative from Rio Rancho, a Republican out there, who says that he likes the idea of doing prioritizing projects like this through a commission, more like the tribal infrastructure system, more like the public school capital outlay system, so that these bridges would rise far above these other projects that happen in Albuquerque and other places with the band uniforms and things like that.
I would say, but what Lori is saying is absolutely right. And this may be the rural and urban divide, but when I was serving on capital outlay, the number of bridges on tribal lands that had been washed out and not replaced was a significant health threat to those communities. They couldn't even get a paramedic unit down to the chapter house. It was that bad. And I haven't looked recently, but I'm going to bet that some of those bridges still haven't been replaced.
That's right.
Listening to the State of the State address, I was kind of waiting for the governor to say the word ethics, partially because that's the, you know, that's one of our project topics. And it has been such a big deal since Diana Duran was serving in county jail time on corruption charges. We've been talking a lot about what changes we'll have to see in state government before they start trusting public officials again. But Martinez didn't mention ethics or the idea of an ethics commission, which she hasn't really fully endorsed in the past. Bruce, this is a state with a small population. A lot of people know each other. They are friends. People get accused of doing things to help their buddies. But, I mean, a lot of people are our buddies. Can you know, how does this dynamic work in your mind?
Clearly, there's a difference between giving the nod to someone you know over someone you don't know when both are equally meritorious, and paying people off with favors. I think one of the problems we have in general in government in New Mexico is that people don't know where to go to get clear answers on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. You know, you can go to the Attorney General's website. You can go to various websites and look at New Mexico code. But one of the things that that I think is missing in most of state bureaucracy is a real ethics system where what we have is ethics counselors who are available for people to talk to. And this was one of the innovations that we put in the city of Albuquerque, and I don't see why we can't do something like that at the state level. Ethics is something that we should expect of our state legislators, our elected officials, and of, obviously, of our appointed officials, our bureaucrats, if you will. And, you know, the problem we have in New Mexico is we have so little, and it winds up being badly allocated. And in an odd way, the capital outlay discussion and the ethics discussion are related, because what we're really talking about is the distribution of our very scarce resources in a way that does the most good for the most that we can. And neglecting capital outlay and neglecting ethics are really, in some respects, the two sides of the same coin, if you will.
You bring up a good point that I often forget to mention, which is that a lot of people do say they're not sure about what the rules are. And when we write stories about folks who have done things that we find shocking, a lot of times they say, well, I didn't know that wasn't okay. I didn't know I couldn't spend my campaign funds on that. I didn't know I couldn't use my per diem for that. I didn't know I wasn't allowed to do this or that. And one of the functions of something like an ethics commission, whatever shape and form that thing might take, establishing some sort of office devoted to that would have an educational component that right now is very small, underfunded, and sort of hanging out in the Secretary of State's office, which in retrospect maybe wasn't the best way to do that.
Look at the cascade of events that happens when you don't pay attention to these things. You know, if you have someone who, whether they're an elected official or whether they are an appointed official, and they're accused of malfeasance or some sort of unethical action that stretches to the illegal, at some point they have the claim that they weren't given the proper tools by the state to know what it was they were going to do. And this leads to lawsuits, leads to the increase of risk management funds. Ethics and rationalization of the distribution of resources is, to my mind, the foundation of good government, along, of course, with transparency, so we can see that all these things are going on. These are not independent issues. They're, in a way, related and networked issues. And we desperately need to pay attention to ethics in this state, because it's not just the right thing to do, it's also the rational thing to do.
Thank you for that, Bruce. Let's go to Zach in Santa Fe. Zach, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. Thank you to your panel as well for having a candid conversation about the governor's state of the state. I wanted to talk to you today because I feel that there's an important element here missing from the governor's speech, and that is just the future and the state of New Mexico for millennials going forward for the next 5 to 15 years. A lot of these tough-on-crime bills, you know, we understand and we agree with the governor on those when it comes to, you know, putting away child pornography, criminals, when it gets dangerous people off the street. But there was no substance or no real detailed plan coming out at the core of why people commit crimes, which is poverty, a lack of a job, you know, psychological well-being, which, you know, the track record is not too great when it comes to health care providers here in New Mexico under this governor. And the final element, which is a detailed energy plan. You know, the governor mentioned in her speech it's going to be an all-out, all energy is welcomed here. That's just simply not sustainable. If we're talking about long-term economic growth, millennials need to have a sense of confidence moving forward that the jobs that they're going to go into are going to be around past 5 to 10 years. So I think the transparency and the pivoting towards, you know, tough on crime, people are catching on to that. And we're looking at, you know, what does this really mean? We can't run from the numbers. 30% of our kids in poverty, when you're at the lowest point, your most vulnerable population is worse off in your state, you have one heck of a problem.
Thank you so much for that. Thanks, Zach. Thanks for reminding us to talk about millennials and the future that we're building for them. Let's talk to Bob in Albuquerque. Bob, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning and thank you for the show. And I somewhat hesitate to now get into the nuance of tax law and municipal finance.
Oh, do it, do it, do it.
Perhaps another show could bring in the state's bond council. But when those bonds are issued, there's what's called a temporary period. And you have 3 years to spend those bond proceeds on allowable project. If those proceeds are not spent, it's kind of tricky, but you can substitute projects or you have to redeem the bonds. So,
or
I don't know.
Or pay arbitrage.
Arbitrage, yeah. Well, you have a 3-year temporary period where you can arbitrage.
Bob, I hear you saying that the state of New Mexico, the legislature, is managing its money as poorly as I do, and I'll be the first to admit that it's bad. Like I am constantly doing everything the wrong way and putting the wrong things on my credit card and then getting into overdraft and doing dumb stuff and not putting enough money away for retirement and then taking that out to buy a car and stupid stuff. Is that what you're essentially saying?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's something to look into here. If these bonds are being issued for capital outlay, well, the proceeds of those bonds have to be spent on capital outlay. And under tax law, they have to do a very strict accounting of that. So somewhere in someone's office, there's an accounting of the proceeds. You know, I would start with the trustee, perhaps, of the bond issue.
That's a good point. And we will think about that, Bob. We've only got a couple minutes left in the show, and I will definitely be following up on the internecine issues in the capital outlay process. But I want to talk about one more thing before we go. And Governor Martinez mentioned in her speech that she wanted to close what she called the revolving door. Janice, in New Mexico, there are a lot of lawmakers who leave office and immediately take jobs lobbying the people they used to sit next to. Is this a problem, or is this just, you know, hey, I'm an expert on some stuff now. Why can't I use this?
Well, I would say so the biggest problem is actually with the tax code. So if we have a legislature that is doing economic development and a former legislator becomes a lobbyist, the first thing they say, well, we'll go to Santa Fe and we'll get a tax break. And if you look at your economic climate based on how much I can get out of the legislature rather than focusing on a stable, productive tax system, you actually get what we have right now, which is not enough jobs and an uncertain future for millennials. It's what you get. And so to that very core, do I think that there you shouldn't use your expertise? No, I don't think that. But there is that one-to-one relationship.
Bruce, sometimes I sit in a committee meeting and I look in the back row and I see people who used to be the Speaker of the House, people who used to be the chairs of really important committees, people who served for 20 years in the legislature. What do you think the effect of that is on folks who might be serving their first term and serving on committees? Is that influence powerful on them?
Well, of course, that sort of influence is powerful. People are looking for leadership, and they have respect for those who've been there before them. This is a difficult problem. You want lobbyists who are knowledgeable, obviously, because what you lobbyists help prepare legislation, and you want people who understand the problems, but the influence peddling is what we're trying to eliminate in this.
And that is, you know, I'd love to take a job with you. I'm going to retire now from the legislature. I'm going to take that job and I'm going to make a whole bunch of money because it's going to be really easy for me to persuade these guys to do what you want.
Right. And that's the cooling off. That's where those who are looking for what can be called a cooling off period, where one is not eligible for a lobbying service or registering as a lobbyist or doing professional lobbying work. Obviously, one can consult on with both citizen groups as well as corporate groups.
But isn't it almost like forced maternity leave, you know, where you if you enforce a cooling off period, you tell people, hey, don't do anything in the field that you are now an expert in, but come back and do it in 2 years after, you know, your usefulness is expired. Is that fair?
Well, I don't think it's fair. I don't think there's a shelf life on that kind of usefulness or those kinds of connections and knowledge. But beside that, what it really comes down to is, do people pick the time they're going to leave in order to get the return on their service? And the return on their service belongs to the citizens of New Mexico, not to them individually. So it makes some sense. Look, lobbying and influence is clearly a problem. And it's not just a problem in New Mexico. It's a problem at every level of government. And anything we can do to soften that, I think, is important.
Lori, I was going to go to you.
Sorry. So I think that this is, it really does demonstrate the need for an independent ethics commission. I think his point of like having well laid out rules to follow and the resources to implement those rules and give advice on legal advice on what is proper and what is not. And, you know, all that sort of thing is just critically important because we've seen times in the voting arena, right, where you find that the county clerks don't have the resources available. They don't have enough voting ballots. And then to us, it looks like, oh, that was on purpose or it's unethical, you know, but really, is it an issue of resources and competence? Like all those sorts of issues come into play. And just one last thing is, you know, I'm going to go out on the limb here, but I really think it's important for us to professionalize our legislature. You know, I think that could actually help in terms of dealing with some of these issues. Regarding lobbying and the revolving door, all that kind of stuff.
And again, these are not very clear political fights because Representative Terry McMillan has a bill that would pay state lawmakers, and he's a Republican. Republican Jim Dines has a bill that would establish an ethics commission, too.
It is, and so does Representative Egoff, a Republican and a Democrat. And I tell you, please look at Representative Dines' bill because it only allows limited confidentiality, which you've touched on, whereas Representative Egoff's has tremendous confidentiality. Isn't that interesting?
Both of those models we see in other states, too. Folks, I want to thank you all for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. And I want to say a special thank you to our guests, Lori Wiocki of the Native American Voters Alliance. Thank you for being here. And former State Representative Janice Arnold-Jones, thank you again for coming
in.
And UNM Professor Bruce Pearlman, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
We also heard earlier from Justin Horwath, a reporter at the Santa Fe New Mexican. We want you to find out more about the things we talked about today. We've posted links to some of this information. Check it out at KUNM.org. If you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. Email comments to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today, Kaveh Movahed screened your calls, Anna Landy assisted, Eileen Baumgartel is our executive producer. Support for this project, the People, Power, and Democracy Project, comes from the Thornburg Foundation. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.